Speaking today with State Representative Garnett Coleman, who represents the 147th District in Houston. Representative Coleman, let's start by talking about previous legislative session. What would you say were the main accomplishments that you had in the last legislative session?
Well, I think really important were bills that pertain to economic development in the areas around Hobby Airport and the South Park area, as well as bills that dealt with HIV and AIDS in prison. But moving forward, trying to restore kids to the Children's Health Insurance Program, which has been a real hard fight since sometime mid-03 that happened. At least 100,000 kids were restored, and we'll see if more. But that's a fight we still have to fight.
Let's talk a little bit more about that. I mean, more than 100,000 kids were cut off from CHIP in the first place, so we're not quite back to where we want to be. What do you foresee as the future?
Well, I think the future comes from who's the leadership in Austin, quite frankly. Tom Craddock has said he doesn't care about CHIP. It's not a big deal to him. And that's the reason why only 100,000 kids got restored and not the full 227,000. So to me, it's always been about the priorities of the leadership, and the leadership, quite frankly, doesn't believe that government should be involved in health care programs for anybody, none less children. And so I think that's why we have to continue to fight with 1.3 million uninsured children in Texas and a total of 5 million uninsured people that we're behind, and President Bush and Tom Craddock et al. Are making it very difficult to catch up with the rest of the country.
What kind of effect has the federal government's action or inaction on expanding SCHIP going to have on the 2009 effort?
I think it has a big impact. Even though that SCHIP will continue, but the allocations in terms of more money into the system, Texas's allocation will be diminished because our capacity has permanently shifted to other states. So we don't get that capacity back because we've lost that additional capacity under the amount of money that's allocated to Texas. Also, there are two policies that have recently gone into place moved by the Bush White House. They're both regulations, not laws. And what they do is prevent Children's Medicaid and Medicaid in general from being expanded through 1115 waivers, and prevents Texas or any other state from moving its CHIP eligibility level up to a greater income level. So some states are at 250% of poverty. If Texas wanted to do that, we cannot do that.
What level are we at right now?
We're at 200% of poverty.
Okay, so how many more people would be affected if we could raise it to 250%?
Oh, I mean, you know, I don't
ballpark.
I just have no idea, but it's a lot. We know that even under 200% of poverty, without all of the barriers, you could put in another 100, you could get to 660,000 kids covered. So I know that much. I can't tell you what 50% of poverty changed or not, but that's within 200% of poverty if you change the assets test and some of those other barriers.
Now, some barriers were removed in the last session. I believe the renewal period was changed from 6 months to a year.
Well, not quite.
Not quite. All right, tell me more about it.
So 6 months, it's a year, but your eligibility is checked at 6 months, and if you are not eligible, you're removed. So even though it continues, income and assets are checked at 6 months.
Well, devil's advocate, why shouldn't they be?
Oh, well, I mean, in most insurance plans, it's a year. And the reason why people have taken, and governments around the country have taken a different approach, is because if you're going to do managed care, the idea is that you have wellness components of managing any child or any adult's care. You can't manage it if they come in and off of health insurance, when preventative care and intervention are a part of the process of providing care for children.
So what you're saying is that the continuity is
continuity of care, but continuity of care and not waiting for whooping cough to be an issue in the emergency room and putting a child in the hospital, making sure they have a doctor to go to. And it's proven itself.
Right. You want them to have regular checkups and whatnot so that anything can be caught early before they need expensive treatments.
Well, that's a requirement under Medicaid for children. Remember, we got in trouble as a state and just resettled the consent decree on the Frew lawsuit. And that's because Texas has failed in dental checkups and failed in medical checkups, which are good for the child, but also good for cost containment as well. So these are things that are just good public policy in terms of caring for individuals' health. And that's why health coverage is extremely important, because intervention is as important as prevention, and not allowing an illness to get to the point where it requires tertiary care, meaning hospitalization. And that's what we're trying to avoid, and that's a huge cost to the system. So when someone says, well, golly, that's going to cost so much more, well, per child to do another 6 months, it's $600. Because the premium on CHIP is $113 a month.
Okay. Another aspect, another thing that's going to be, I think, a big fight in 2009 is over, once again, school finance and the property tax reductions. In the last session, a certain pool of money was set aside to fund continuing property tax cuts in the next biennium. Is that a battle? Is that something that can be refought, or is that completely out of bounds at this point?
Well, I think it's not out of bounds. I mean, it is. I think it's approximately $2.5 to $3 billion set aside to pay for the tax cut that's been put in place for the 2010-2011 budget. But people have to also remember we have $4.5 billion already in the rainy day fund, and unless we go into a recession, we're ahead of our collections and taxes by $1.5 billion. So right now we're talking about $9 billion that is available. Now, my opinion is all that shouldn't be spent on tax cuts, but with that amount of money available, if Craddock et al. Continues to run the state, they will come in and try to drop the school tax rate to 90 cents. Because they had amendments to drop it to 90 cents in the last session. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a bill to drop it from, remember, the valuation went from $1.50 to $1, to drop it to 90 cents, and also see an increase in sales tax proposed in order to pay for that drop to 90 cents, which is something they've been trying to do all along.
And they've generally failed to be able to do it.
Well, that's about the only place they have failed, yeah. To be honest with you. The Grover Norquist agenda is alive and well and being moved by Tom Craddock and all those folks up there in Austin. I mean, the tax caps and tax reductions and reductions in social services and in school spending and the increases in the cost of higher ed, those are all part of the Grover Norquist agenda being carried out in Texas.
Well, it seems like a lot of effort has to be spent in just stopping that. But at some point, it's going to have to be rolled back. How do you do that?
Well, I think that most people are clear that they don't like the direction of the state of Texas. So one of the things that can always happen, and this is something that people forget, is that there are a lot of exemptions in the tax code that could go away, that don't have to exist, particularly under either the franchise tax or any excise taxes. So the first place you go is to make sure that everybody's paying taxes fairly. And I think that there's some room in those exemptions that would allow Texas to raise some additional money. But shoot, you go in and get rid of the enterprise fund. You can go in and get rid of some of these stupid contracts that Perry and them have put out. We've got a managed care organization managing the care of children in foster care, which is really children in Medicaid. Why do we have a separate contract for that service? It's ridiculous. I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever. It's just a pure waste of money. So there are many places where you can go in where their attempts to end success in getting money to their friends can be undone and should be undone.
Okay. It all ultimately comes down, though, to who's in charge of the House. So, I mean, I think this election, more than any other, is going to be about who the Speaker is. You and I, political junkies, know all about this, but sort of give a brief explanation. Why is it important that Tom Craddock not be the speaker anymore?
Well, it really comes down to the one big piece. It's about what you believe and the policies that you think should be enacted. If somebody in Texas thinks that college tuition is too high, they have one person to thank and one person only, and that's Tom Craddock. He is the biggest supporter and defender of tuition deregulation that has increased the cost of college in state colleges beyond what anybody thought it ever could be. I think there's also something else that most people don't realize who actually is running Texas. It's Tom Craddock. You know, Tom DeLay said, "I am the federal government." Well, that probably wasn't too true. And quite frankly, Tom Craddock is smarter than Tom DeLay, and he's meaner. But Tom Craddock is state government, because there's not an issue, even him against Rick Perry or against David Dewhurst, it's not an issue that he hasn't prevailed on. I mean, he has won every step of the way when it comes to policy in Texas. So, if somebody wants to change their government, the first place to start is with the one who's controlling it, and that clearly is Tom Craddock. I mean, the other part is he presided over the rollbacks in CHIP, pushed them. That 2292, which created all the cuts in health and human, that was his bill. And again, tuition dereg, that was his. Refusing to do teacher pay raise, that was him. I mean, this is a guy that leads, doesn't lead the House, he controls the House. And that's why we've been fighting him so much, and we think it's time for him to go, because not only is it a Democratic issue, but it's an issue of fairness, that people can bring things that their constituents think is important and not have them shoved to the side.
And yet there are Democrats who support Tom Craddock, and he couldn't be Speaker today if it weren't for them.
That's correct, and that's a shame. And a lot of us have worked very hard to make sure that those Democrats don't come back. But it's not us. It's got to be everybody that understands that these policies would not happen if Craddock wasn't Speaker. The things I'm talking about would not have happened if Craddock wasn't Speaker. And if we want them to stop, if we want these policies to stop, we have to make sure that Craddock is not Speaker. So everyone should be asked, who is a candidate or non-candidate, that's a Democrat running for the Texas House, will you vote for Tom Craddock or not for Speaker? Because that is the question of the day when it comes to the policy direction of the Texas House of Representatives. And I can tell you right now, I ain't voting for Craddock. And certainly no one else should, but there are people who are going to. And it will be on their head that how this state moves if Craddock is able to retain his speakership.
Now, you have a primary opponent who was on the ballot, then off the ballot, and is suing to get back on the ballot. Where does that stand right now?
Well, I mean, I really don't know the answer. She filed a writ of mandamus with the Supreme Court saying that she should be put back on the ballot. We've answered that. The Supreme Court asked us for an answer. We say she shouldn't be on the ballot.
What is the issue here?
Well, the issue is that she, first of all, when she filed for office, she had not designated a treasurer. So she took a $750 cash contribution, which you're only allowed under the law to take a $100 cash contribution.
We're talking cash money.
Cash money. I mean cash.
Yeah.
You're also not allowed to take a contribution if you don't have a treasurer, and you're not allowed to make an expenditure if you don't have a treasurer. Every one of those is a Class A misdemeanor. So she committed three Class A misdemeanors in the process of paying her filing fee. So the party returned her illegal contribution and illegal expenditure, and so she's asked the court to put her back on the ballot.
On
the grounds that she was disqualified. But the party chair did not disqualify her. The county chair said that the money she used to pay her filing fee was an illegal contribution and illegal expenditure and would not accept it.
And who's representing her on this mandate?
Ron Wilson.
and he is connected to Tom Craddock.
No doubt about it. I mean, he's Tom Craddock's boy, and clearly Ron didn't go away. He just went into another phase of work on behalf of Tom Craddock and the Republicans.
In fact, Wilson is one of Craddock's parliamentarians now.
Well, that's correct, assistant parliamentarian. And Team Craddock is, you know, Wilson is Team Craddock, not ashamed. And I think that this is why people have to understand there are many Democrats across the state who have primary opponents recruited by Tom Craddock and his former member team that he sent out to recruit opponents against Democratic incumbents in the primary.
The parliamentarian played a pretty big role in the last session by, there was a question put before Tom Craddock to inquire about a motion to remove him as Speaker, which he refused to recognize. The parliamentarian at the time resigned over that, as well as the assistant parliamentarian.
That's correct.
The Attorney General just recently issued an opinion about this. Tell us about it and tell me what you think about it.
Well, I mean, it's real simple for me. The rules of the House should rule, and under precedent, it should be that there is a motion to remove any chair. Otherwise, the members don't run their own House. However, moving forward, if we want to change that, I would say that one of the first orders of business in 2009 should be to change the House rules that there is a procedure to remove the chair. It makes sure it's very clear to all members what that procedure is, so that we don't have to discuss this anymore. I'm glad that the Attorney General didn't rule on that, because I don't think it was his place to rule on that. I do believe those are issues of the House. Craddock, not recognizing the motion, said that basically he wasn't recognizing the will of the House. And I think members clearly don't ever want that to happen again. And that's what puts Tom Craddock in the position of not being a favorable... it's not a good thing for him to come back to be Speaker. So I think most people... You're going to see a Speaker's race again on the floor of the House opening day in 2009, and a lot of discussion about the rules and in that first week, and a lot of discussion about how our House is to be run.
Since you've talked about going forward, let's assume we get a favorable outcome and Tom Craddock isn't Speaker, mm-hmm. whether it's a Democrat or some other Republican. Oh. You know, if we have that in place, what do you want to see happen in the House in terms of legislative agenda in 2009?
Well, I mean, first I want fairness restored to the movement of bills, and that the rules of the House are not used to stop bringing ideas to the floor to be voted on by the body. And that's a part of putting the House rules together. And I think that's what gives everybody's point of view a chance on the floor, regardless of whether they're conservative or progressive or middle of the road. It doesn't matter. But right now there are no rules, so the first thing that has to be restored are rules in terms of how we run our House. The second thing is that there is an opportunity to stop bad legislation. So as it's coming through, that there's balance on the committees that allows both Democrats and Republicans to have a say about legislation that's coming through on the merits, as well as balance on calendars where legislation comes through. I would like to see the reversal of tuition dereg. In other words, just repeal that completely. I had a bill to do so. I'd like to see us, as I said, restore CHIP and look at some ways to move forward with dealing with the problem of the uninsured. And I think at least in one House, we could start making progress on that. And that's where we should start, at least in my opinion. But the most important thing is returning trust to the Texas House of Representatives.
Okay. Representative Coleman, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure.